All right. We're continuing a series of topic, Shabbos in the City, how contemporary issues are solved by modern poskim, how they dealt with specifically issues that relate to cosmopolitan settings. We began to discuss our discussion through an analysis of the issue of the subway and as well riding a bike. And this week, I want to continue with a similar type of discussion, one which is not necessarily limited only to cities. In fact, it may be even more prevalent in rural or suburban areas, but I think it relates to very similar issues, and I think it's very worthwhile talking about, and that is the issue of umbrellas. And I want to talk about this week about the use of umbrellas on Shabbos, something which for anyone who's ever been caught in a downpour on the rain on Shabbos is something which is frustrating. You know, you definitely would like to be able to use an umbrella. It definitely would help your ease of travel to shul, to wherever you need to go on Shabbos. An umbrella certainly is a very useful tool. I can tell you from my own experience that when I first started going to Lincoln Square, I originally lived at Columbia, and I would have to walk almost 45 minutes. And it was a nice walk. You know, even when it was cold, it was still a nice walk. But if it rained, it was just miserable. Just walking for that long in the rain, it was never good, and you always walk to shul, you're drenching wet. It's never fun. I'm sure we've all had experiences like it. And so for that reason, I want to talk about umbrellas. It's not only, as I mentioned, maybe even more relevant in suburban or rural areas, but yet I think it's very much related to what we've been talking until now, and it is true even in the city that we do get wet, and I want to talk therefore about the umbrella. So let's begin. I'm going to share my screen. I sourced, if you want to see it on the chat, I sent a link if you want to just see the sources yourself, but I'll share my screen as I have in the past. Okay, so the first time the question of umbrellas came up, as always, feel free to raise your hand, call out a question, write in the chat. Questions are always encouraged. So the first time the question really came up of umbrellas is really in the late 1700s. And you can see I quoted a brief history of the umbrella from Wikipedia, source number one. I just quoted it just so you get a sense of, you know, the history of umbrella when it came into being. That the first lightweight folding umbrella in Europe was introduced in 1710. It could be opened and closed the same way that modern umbrellas are done, and it was weighed, it was movable, it weighed less than a kilogram, so it was, you know, certainly transportable. By 1769, it was already common to offer umbrellas for rent, and it became rather common practice. You kind of get a sense that by the late 1700s, this became very common in Paris, and you can see how they were created. Various different silk fabrics were used. And then by 1800, you can see already there were 7 shops making selling umbrellas in Paris. By 1813, there were 42 shops. By 1848, there were 377 small shops. So you can see kind of the expansion of the umbrellas really began to become popular by the late second half of the 1700s. And by the beginning of the 1800s, they're already very, very popular. Of course, for our discussion, an umbrella is a dual-purpose tool. Umbrellas can be used to protect from the rain. They also likewise can be used in hot or sunny climates to protect from the sun. It's the exact same creation, you know, sunbrella and umbrella. They both work the same way. A parasol or an umbrella, they both work the same way. Same idea, anything you're transporting that you're carrying, that would be an umbrella, and that is the issue at hand. So when did the issue of umbrellas first come up? It came up first. The first time it really comes up in like a tshuva, a very famous tshuva, is in the Tshuva of the Noda Behuda. This Tshuva was written in 1783. It writes as follows, Be'ezrat Hashem, verse source number 2, Prague, Yud Chet Shvat, Taf Kuf Mem Gimel Lamed, Le London. He was asked the following question. He's responding to a Rav in London who asked him the following question on approximately January of 1783. And this Tshuva was written to this person, Morav Leiba Cohen, and he says the following. What is the question? Al davar nisiata parasol mitriya b'shabbat, with regard to the carrying of a parasol or umbrella on Shabbos, v'hu kli ha'asui lehagein b'chama nipnei ha'chama u'begashamim pnei ha'gashamim, and what is an umbrella? Umbrella is a utensil which is used to protect from the sun when it is sunny outside, or from the rain when it is raining. V'hadam nosol al rosho, and a person carries it on top of your head. V'hu ma'hil al rosho, and it covers your head. And it's created using, it has a handle, has certain loops and certain hooks, which are used to open and close the umbrella as you like it. So this person, this Rav in London, wrote to him, wrote to Nodigud the following question. Here's the background. Mikhtav the Chacham Echad de Shalo. Lama in a Mochev Ivne Beitosh, Yosim Beshabat Ima Orla Roshan. So this Rav, this Rabbi Leva Cohen in London, had written to another Rav in his community who had allowed people in his community to walk out with an umbrella, right? This other London or probably England, UK-based rabbi had permitted umbrellas. And this Leva Cohen is asking, why are you allowing? The Chacham and this rabbi in the UK, Heshiv lo tamim latir, he gave several reasons for why it is mutter. Umalato chazar v'heshiv lo listor tamayater. So this other rabbi in London, Leva Cohen, said no. He doesn't think that's right. He thinks that really it should be aser. And so because it became a kind of an argument, this Rabbi Leva Cohen decided to appeal to kind of a higher authority. He appealed to the Gadol Hador of the community of that generation, to the Noda Yehuda living in Prague, who really was the Gadol Hador, the accepted posik of the generation. So he asks him, what is Noda Yehuda's position on this issue? Does he agree with this Rabbi Leva Cohen who prohibited use of umbrella on Shabbos, or does he permit it like this other rabbi in the UK? And he says, he recognizes that this person who answered the question clearly is a Chacham, clearly is someone respectable, and nonetheless, he disagrees with him. He thinks that She'amet Ito, I think that the truth is that indeed having an umbrella on Shabbos is prohibited. And not only is it prohibited, but he adds, V'hine amin ali. This utensil, the umbrella, was already brought to Prague a number of years earlier, and many people became accustomed to using it, and because they became so accustomed to using it during the week, they began to also use it on Shabbos and were using it regularly. And I, the Noda Yehuda, I protested its use on Shabbos, and I gave a drasha, I gave a fiery response, prohibiting it in shul, telling everyone you cannot use it. Shehu isur gamor, it is very much forbidden. And I argued that I even believe that potentially it is an isur skila. It is a Torah level prohibition, not only rabbinic. It is a Torah level prohibition for which you would potentially even be liable to the punishment of skila, of stoning. And from then on, I continuously preach about the fact that it is forbidden to use an umbrella on Shabbos, and due to that, most of my congregation indeed are diligent with respect to not use an umbrella on Shabbos. So that's kind of the first time that the tshuva comes up. Noda Yehuda most famously prohibits using an umbrella. A little bit later, in 1813 or so, the Chatam Sofer is asked about him, he as well is asked about this tshuva, about the same issue, using an umbrella. He's writing this tshuva not in Prague, but in Pressburg, and a little bit later, and he asked the following question. He says, V'hine ha'met, the truth is, d'hashtacha ruba d'amonim nos'im oto b'shabbat, ela sh'niftachim ayde goy. The truth is, he's responding what is happening in his community. He said, for the majority of people, they use umbrellas on Shabbos, but they don't use it. They don't open the umbrellas themselves. Rather, they have a non-Jew open the umbrella for them. Right? So they go to the local doorman or whoever is around. They ask them, please open the umbrella, and they themselves then use that umbrella on Shabbos until they get to shul or wherever they're going, and then they have a non-Jew maybe close the umbrella. But the opening and closing is done by non-Jews, but they do indeed use umbrellas. And they're permitted based on various reasons. And Mir Lachi is only a Shavut, but Filu Yerak Isar Durabanan, even if it's only Durabanan, Ptichat Pratsam, Mikomakom, Havalem Mir Lachi Shavut is Shavut, Umihi Tirlahem. So he asked the question, he's being asked the question, how is this permitted? At the end of the day, asking a non Jew to do a malacha for you is still malacha, is still forbidden for someone to ask a non Jew to do work on your behalf. And he says, however, V'achar Yun Hadei Kitev Omerani, I, responding to this after much analysis, I concluded that bevadai lista parasal b'shabbat la mishnat chasedim hi b'shomer nafsho yichachim menu. Despite the fact that it is not ideal to use an umbrella on Shabbos, if you are a chassid, if you are you are above the letter of the law, if you really are stringent with yourself and how you keep the mitzvot, then ideally you really should not use an umbrella on Shabbos. Aval mikol makom lefi no atati eno kimo shechashuv agaon datzal. I do not agree with the note of Yehuda. I indeed think that it is permissible. permissible to use an umbrella on Shabbos, I do not think it is prohibited. And so, in effect, we have this major debate between the Chatam Sofer and the Noda Bihuda. Are you permitted to use an umbrella on Shabbos? Noda Bihuda strikes first, and he says, no, it is prohibited. And the Chatam Sofer, both reflecting on the common custom people were indeed using umbrellas, he argues that indeed it is permitted to use an umbrella. Yeah, all this assumes there's an eruv indeed for carrying. It is worth noting that you might think to yourself, and we'll get back to this maybe at the very end of the discussion, at the end of the shiur tonight, is that think about where these tshuvos are being written, right? The first tshuva of the Noda Bihuda writing in Prague is addressing a person who is asking the questions from London. So you may think to yourself, you know, how much rain does it rain in London versus how much rain does it rain in Prague? Or how much rain does it rain in Pressburg, you know, where the Chatam Sofer is writing the tshuva? Because, indeed, if you think about this tshuva now, when we'll discuss this as we go on, different climates, you know, it rains different amounts. And the way that a posek might respond to a particular issue may relate to how much of a need it is, that particular utensil. So, you know, whether you write a tshuva in Israel, where it doesn't rain as often, versus writing a tshuva in London or in New York, where it rains a lot more, that the fact that it's much more necessary, you know, the use of an umbrella is going to be much more useful here versus in Israel, may be a factor which you consider perhaps in analyzing this tshuva. You may consider that, and we might return to that at the end of the shiur. At the end of the day, though, it is worth noting that while I might have thought, and maybe might think as well, that London, you know, commonly is thought to have a very rainy climate, especially in comparison to maybe the rest of the continent of Europe, the truth is, I just looked it up, just for the sake of the shiur, I was curious, and I don't know the data back from the 1800s, I can't speak to what happened then, but assuming that the rainfall from 1800 is fairly similar to what it was now, it's worth noting that in the year 2000 or 2022, the average rainfall on a given year in London is about 690 millimeters of rain for the course of the whole year. And the average rainfall for Prague is about 689 millimeters of rain. So they're pretty much almost equivalent climates in terms of total rainfall. I think that to argue that there's a difference between, you know, the Noda Bihuda responding to a question in London versus Prague, the use of an umbrella would be equally useful in both climates, and nonetheless, Noda Bihuda is willing to be out there. So that's, you know, certainly something to think about, that the particular place you're located in is not going to be as determinative as you might have thought. Okay, that's with regard to the specific placement. Yeah, any questions or comments? Yeah. We'll get there. We're going to get there. Let's get there right now. Let's get this right now. So why is it that there would be a problem with umbrella? What are the main arguments? So I want to break this down. The main argument at the end of the day, we're going to see, is that there is a problem of creating an ohel, a tent. One of the 39 melachot is the melacha of bone, of building. And the melacha of building refers not only to building a house, but really building any structure, especially a structure with a roof on top of you. That is melacha of bona. And so the argument that the Noda Bihuda is going to position and going to really argue strongly is that when you open up an umbrella, what you are in effect doing is you're creating a tent. You are creating an enclosure that encloses space underneath, right? When you have the umbrella closed, so let me pull an umbrella here, I actually have it. Although we all know what an umbrella looks like, it might just be helpful just to see it. When an umbrella is closed, right, you can see there's really no space underneath the umbrella. Right? The area underneath the umbrella is almost nothing. But then when you open the umbrella up, now there's all this space underneath. And this area over here would be considered to be an ohel, would be considered to be a tent. And arguably, therefore, you would have transgressed the malacha of bona, the act of building on Shabbos. So that's going to be... Okay, so let's get there. Exactly. Great. Okay. But I just want to build that the main argument is it's going to be a malacha of bona. That's the main contention of the Noda Bihuda. The problem is that the Chatam Sofer is going to disagree. He's going to say it's not actually the malacha of bona. It's not actually building a tent. There are, I would argue, four primary questions when it comes to the Malacha of Bona, this issue of building, that come up. I'm going the Malacha itself of Bona, I'm going to just mention as a prelude to what I'm going to say now, is rather complicated, so I'm not going to really go into all the details. I want to kind of just hit the main points. If it gets too technical for you, feel free to just like zone out until the end when I make a summary of it. But I will just go through the main points here, so hopefully it doesn't get too technical. If it does, feel free to zone out until we get back to the summary of the main problems of the Machloket between Noda Behuda and the Chasam Sofer. So what are they arguing about in terms of Ohel? Why would it be a tent? Why would it not be a tent? So there are four main contentions of debate. The first one is the question that Micah just mentioned, the issue of the fact that the tent is temporary, right? If anyone know, you know, if you've ever opened up an umbrella, you know you're never going to keep it open forever. You're going to close it, presumably when you get home or after it dries out. Very soon after it's going to close. It's clearly meant as a temporary OL, not a permanent OL. Here's the problem. The Noda Behuda argues, and this is source number four, he argues based on the Rif. The Rif makes this outstanding claim that anytime you open up a tent, anytime you make a tent on Shabbos, it is considered to be permanent, as long as it has a certain size. This is source number four. Ve'od anu lemedim chidush gadol midvarav. We learn this rather big chiddush, this really big concept from the Rif. She'im yesh begaga o bepachot mishlosha legaga tefach. If there is in a roof a tefach, one hand's hand width space underneath a roof, hari ze ol kavua v'chayav skila b'mezid v'chatat b'shogeg, then automatically it is defined as a permanent tent. Permanence, in other words, for the Rif, is not actually dependent upon whether or not the roof in question is going to be dismantled or erected, you know, quickly, or when it'll be dismantled. That's not relevant for kavua, for a set permanent tent. All that matters is the size of the tent. If the tent has the size of a handbreadth, then automatically it is defined as a kavua ol, as a permanent tent, and you're chayav midoraita for building a tent. You have violated a Torah level prohibition. Not everyone agrees with the Rif, but the Noda Behuda feels that most people agree with it, and he feels so strongly about this Rif that he thinks that anytime you indeed make a tent, you have to be choshesh for this Rif, and therefore, and that's what I meant when I said that I think that there might even be a prohibition of a skila, that if you open an umbrella, you are, in theory, perhaps even violating a Torah-level prohibition because you are making a tent, which according to the Rif, even though it is permanent, it is temporary in the sense that you're going to dismantle it soon, nonetheless, because it has the necessary size, it is now defined as a permanent tent, which is over midoraita for the Rif. And accordingly, also for the Noda Behuda. Joe asks, is the Rif aware of umbrellas? I don't think so, based historically. I think they're built later. Regardless, there are certain sugyas that deal with this, and they still say it's not a question of awareness of the object. It's really a question of just the way he reads the material, reads the Gemara, and the way he understands the Gemara is a little more complicated for our particular shiur here. But the way he reads it is he reads it at any time an object is built that has a covering of a certain space, automatically it is defined as a Torah level prohibition, regardless of whether it'll be dismantled very soon afterwards. That's just the way the Rif understands the Gemara, and the Noda Behuda follows that Rif's position. However, the Rif is really not the majority position. Most disagree with him. So the Chatam Sofer, he quotes from the Yerushalmi, that the parasol is not Isser Min HaTorah, and he gives three different reasons. We're going to go through the different reasons. The first reason, indeed, Chada Dehavile Binyan L'Sha'ah, because indeed, building of an umbrella is only a temporary structure. Who perish being the shell, who has to meet Khalif Notov Sotro, the Shatov, Lacholiv Notov Sotro, anything which is built to be erected and then dismantled, erected and then dismantled, whenever you'd like to build it, you can erect and dismantle it. Kamoshaya Mishkan Asui, just as the Mishkan itself was erected and dismantled, they are not defined to be permanent building spaces. They are defined as temporary. All right, he disagrees in effect with the Rift contention. Likewise, the court source six briefly is the Meiri as well. One of the Rishonim is just the clearest language, but plenty of Rishonim disagree with the Rif. It says as follows, Ein Yerakin disagrees with the Rif. Begag tefachu oel elashuhu oel arai. A tent which has a certain space under it, has a tefach, even though it now is a tent, it's still defined as a temporary tent. And so, in other words, the contention of the Chatam Sofer, the Meiri, and most Rishonim is that the definition of a tent, which is obligated, a Torah obligation, not only does it have to have a certain size, but it also has to be permanent in the standard definition of permanence, meaning it's not going to be dismantled anytime soon. And therefore, an umbrella which is built to be dismantled and erected, you know, whenever you'd like to, and it's probably going to be dismantled very soon, is not going to be prohibited, at least definitely not on a Torah level. That's debate number one. What is the definition of permanence? And does it apply to an umbrella? Is permanence just any size? That's what permanence means when it comes to OL. Or does permanence refer to actual time in terms of how long will umbrella be erected for, will be dismantled, right? That's debate number one. Any questions on debate number one? It is actually a really interesting question. You have to look at the Chatam Sofer has a rather longer tshuva about that, and he actually thinks that and then Binyan in the what is building in the time of the Mishkan referred to something else. It wasn't referring to this part, it was referring to something else, but it is an interesting question. I want to kind of move on, but if you want, we can speak about it afterwards. But it is an interesting question to think about. Okay, that's debate number one. Debate one is about what definition of keva. Debate two relates to the fact that the tent in question here, the umbrella, is a moving tent. Is a moving tent considered to be a tent? Is that really defined as a, you know, a dwelling space? So the Chatam Sofer quotes this, and this is also one of the arguments that the rabbi in London, or the UK rabbi who permitted umbrellas, also makes the same argument, that anything which is a moving tent, it's not really defined as moving, right? Tents, you know, dwelling spaces, they're permanent. They don't move around. If they're moving around, it's clearly not a tent, at least on a Torah level. And we'll look at source number seven. The second reason why he permits umbrellas, the lo matzinu kayotze bazeh b'mikdash, we don't find any model of a binyan, of building, which moves like this. She'a ol over makom la makom, that the tent itself would move from place to place, ayde adam anos o be'atzmo, that a person would carry this tent as it was moving from place to place. And as we'll see, the Noda Yehuda disagrees with this. And he disagrees with Noda Yehuda, but the Noda Yehuda, he does disagree with this. He thinks that, in theory, moving tents can still be considered to be tents. How is that so? How can a moving tent be considered to be a tent? So the Noda Yehuda writes as follows. He gives, effectively, two arguments. The first is that when all the sources, there's a number, it's a very rather involved sugya, the question of moving tents, most of which are tumah and tara issues that relate to, you know, dead bodies and when are you tumah underneath a tent of a dead body. But most of that sugya, the Rebbe argues, refers to a case in which the tent itself is moving on top of you temporarily, right? So you're standing in place A and the tent comes on top, and it moves quickly over you, you know, and it's over you for a brief second. So in those scenarios, the Noda Yehuda argues, he agrees, yes, a temporary tent is not a tent. But what's different about this case is that the tent in question is moving with you, right? It's true that the tent is moving, you know, I went from my home to the shul, but I was underneath that tent the entire time, right? The entire time the tent was really encompassing me or overlapping me. I was always protected by this tent. And so since it's moving with me, it is actually defined as a tent. That's kind of his first argument. He makes an argument from Tumah. It's a little more complicated, so I'm not going to read it inside. But that's the basic idea, that he thinks a moving tent is also a tent. Part two of this, he says, even if you disagree with me that a moving tent is a tent, nonetheless, v'od v'chi tamid, this is at the three dots, the very last line in source 8, וכי תמיד הוא מהלך בו, ולא בשעה שמעמידו עומדו במקומו, ותקף עובר בשעת באיסטור שבת. He says, even if you disagree, you think that, you know, at the end of the day, moving tents, they're not really tents, they're not defined as a prohibition of malacha of bone. Nonetheless, at some point, when you are walking, you're going to stop, right? The street light might be red, you might stop for a second to catch your breath, whatever it is, you're going to stop for a second, you're not always going to be moving. And at that moment, when you stop moving, that's when they got you, that's when you'll be under a non-moving tent, and the tent will have then be defined as a tent, and you will have been transgressed the malacha of bona. And so even if in practice a moving tent is not actually a tent, nonetheless, if you stop moving at some point, which you inevitably will, at that moment it will be a tent, and you will have transgressed the prohibition. And so debate number two, the Chatam Sofer disagrees with this whole argument. And debate number two relates to, is a moving tent defined as an ohel or not? That's debate two. Debate three relates to a question about walls, right? To be able to be defined as a tent, you need to have not only a covering on top, but you need to have some type of walls underneath. And so the question is, an umbrella, right, only has, because of the slope of an umbrella, it has like a little bit of walls. Like it's enough of walls that's defined a little bit as walls. That's what the Noda Bihu is going to argue. But the Chasam Sofer is going to argue that a little bit of walls is not sufficient. You need walls which come down to the ground to be defined as a tent, as an OL. It's not sufficient to have, you know, walls which, you know, come down for like a few inches. It needs to actually reach the ground, reach the bottom. And so, as most umbrellas, indeed, the walls do not reach the bottom, it would be indeed a problem. It would not actually be defined as a tent. See source 9, ve'od ba'shlishit, she'in oel d'oraita, elak shemechitzot megiut la'aretz, k'mo she'ad b'mishkan. A tent is only defined when the mechitzot, the walls, reach the ground. As they reach in the mishkan, when they built something in the tabernacle, indeed, the walls reach the ground. Aval mechitzot ha'tluyot ba'avir, if the walls are hanging in the air, and there's no way to add on to those walls, right? Nothing is attached to these walls. It is certainly not a Torah level prohibition of building an ohel. The Noda Bihuda disagrees. He says no. Parasol kulo iniu beishish samuch lishlosham idago yoter mirochav tefach. As long as it has in effect 3 inches or 3 handbreadths of distance, you know, that like goes down, it kind of the slope goes down a certain amount, then it's defined ki yashifu lemata shalech be'orech kamat shvachim heimad fanot, that incline or decline, right, that descends an umbrella, that is enough to be defined as a wall. It doesn't actually have to reach the ground. And so debate number three will relate to the fact that the walls of an umbrella do not go down to the ground. It is perhaps worth noting that there are some umbrellas you may see out there where they have a regular umbrella, and then there's kind of the plastic that people like envelops people. I might have seen it on the street sometimes. I think it's more popular in China. I've seen more people in China do it, you know, videos of people in China. So I think, so those type of things, the Chatam Sofer would agree that they reach the ground, they're more problematic. But at least for the common umbrella, Chatam Sofer disagree that it's not defined as an OL as long as the walls do not reach the ground. That's debate number three. Debate number four relates to a concept called a troskel. It refers to a type of folding chair, right? Think about the type of modern folding chair that you build now. When a folding chair is collapsed, right? It's just standing against a wall or something. So it doesn't cover any air underneath. When you open up the chair, though, all of a sudden, right, if you think about it, underneath the chair, you've all of a sudden made an OL. You've made some type of covering, right? Because now underneath the chair, you now have, you know, several inches of covered roof, in effect. And yet the Gemara does not prohibit opening some type of foldable chair. And so the question the Chasam Sofer deals with, and that we have to contend with as well, is why is that permitted? Right? Shouldn't that be a model for umbrellas? Then umbrellas also as a temporary opening should be permitted. And not only is it temporary opening should be permitted, but as well, there's something to be said about the fact that why is a folding chair permitted? Part of the argument could be that a folding chair is similar to a door. something which is built to be opened and closed, right? When you open a door, right? No one ever says opening a door or closing a door is the malacha bona of building, right? Even though when I opened the door, like part of the wall effectively disappeared, I destroyed part of the building. When I closed the door, all of a sudden, part of my house now has been reformed and I've built the house, so to speak. And yet no one prohibits closing or opening a door on Shabbos. That gets obviously permitted on Shabbos. And so the argument goes that that should be a similar thing is happening with the troska, with this folding chair. And likewise, what happens to an umbrella? An umbrella is built to be opened and closed. And it shouldn't be defined as, you know, something new happening, some new building process happening. If I'm just doing the way it's ordinarily built, it's built to be opened and closed. That's the way it works. So that's the argument the Chatam Sofer makes. Source 11, he says, v'kevan shizachinu l'din sheino d'oraita. Once I've proven the past proofs we've already addressed, that it's clearly not a d'oraita prohibition. In kein emela afilu istir d'rabbanan laka, he thinks there's not even a rabbinic prohibition. D'harei talit kfula, ibechutin shari afilu chatchila, v'hachanamik krasim l'laot. He quotes a similar case to the Trasko case, this foldable chair. As long as there is ropes or some type of means of opening it up and closing it naturally, then it should be easily permitted. It should be permitted even midoraita, midorbanan, even from an rabbinic level. And he quotes at the end, im kein lechol hapachot, mutar lepotcha ma'idei goy, v'ein harish ha'olam mishvel zeh. And therefore, at the very least, it should be permitted for a non-Jew to do it for you, since it's entirely permitted. It's not even prohibited, he thinks, even rabbinically. But even if it was rabbinically prohibited, perhaps you can still argue that shvut is shvut b'alakom mitzvah, it'd be permitted, and therefore it's going to be permitted to have a non-Jew at the very least open up the umbrella for you. And definitely, ein leharish ha'olam mishvel zeh, you should definitely not make a big deal and make a steering speech in shul prohibiting umbrellas use on Shabbos. That's the Chatam Sofer's contention. Oh, wow, he stole the words out of my next source. Okay, great. Source number 12. The argument that people disagree with is the quoted by few, quoted the Shulchan Aruch Harav, as well as Chavodat. Chavodat is Yechavodat, it's a good missing there. Is the Ravadia quotes this. The ain lidmot mitri'a l'kizei shel prakim. You shouldn't compare an umbrella to a foldable chair. Why? Because when it comes to an umbrella, you are intentionally opening the umbrella to protect you underneath. You're going to stand underneath the umbrella and it's going to protect you. When you open up a foldable chair, or likewise you open up a foldable table, right, no one's opening it up for the purpose of standing underneath the chair or underneath the table. That's not why it's built. The fact that there's, you know, some protection underneath the table or the chair is, you know, is entirely circumstantial. It's not at all your intention. It's not what it's built for. And therefore he argues that you cannot make an example from the foldable chair. An umbrella is going to be prohibited for creating an ohel. Tent is going to be prohibited. That's the argument of the Chavidat, Arvadia, as well as the Shulchan Aruch Rav. Indeed, as Alan argued, you could differentiate between the cases. Nonetheless, not everyone does. As I quote 11, Chatam Sofer disagrees with that. He thinks that you could make a comparison. And so too the Chazon Ish in source 13, when he discusses the same issue, he also thinks there should be no difference between a foldable chair and a parasol, and not only that, he thinks that really should be no difference from a parasol or an umbrella and a door. He thinks the exact same thing. He actually quotes explicitly the case of a door. Sha'areze chashiv kitashmish delet v'zeu tam heter. It is exactly comparable to the case of a door. There should be no reason to differentiate between them. It is going to be permitted on that end. And so, if I were to summarize until now, what we've seen is that the primary contention of the Noda Yehuda, the primary contention for most poskim who think there's a real issue of umbrellas, is that there is a problem of ohel, of building a tent. That is the primary contention. The Chatam Sofer, the Chazon Ish, they disagree. They think, no, there is no problem of building a tent. That argument, as we mentioned, hinges on four primary questions. Question A, the definition of kavua, of permanence, when it comes to building a tent. The Noda Yehuda thought that permanence refers to just any tent, regardless of the time that it'll stay erect, while the Chatam Sofer thought we use regular definitions of time. Typically, in Melachat Shabbos, we care about how long something is built or how long Melachat is done for, and that's going to apply just as well for a umbrella. Issue one. Issue two was movable tents. Is a moving tent defined as a tent or an umbrella which moves with you? Is that defined as a tent? Issue three was whether or not the walls need to descend to the ground, or is it sufficient that you have walls hanging up in the air? Is that defined as an OL, as a tent? Issue four was, is this case of an umbrella comparable to an issue of a folding chair, of a foldable table, of something which resembles a door, or is it different and distinct because of the fact that it is built specifically for the sake of protecting you from the elements, as opposed to a door, as opposed to a foldable chair, foldable table, where you have no intention of sitting underneath it and using its airspace as protection? That's the argument when it comes to the OL question. Those are the main halachic contentions. However, in addition to those, there are a few other contentions which are brought up in poskim. Issue number one is the Noda Yehuda, who writes at the end of his tshuva that he thinks that based on everything he said, derech klal, he says, as a rule, even if, right, you were to imagine yourself that all the arguments he's meant so far have been an argument of what happens if I have my umbrella closed on Shabbos and I want to open it to be able to go to shul or wherever I want to go. What if, though, I'm at home and my umbrella is already open, right? I knew it was going to rain on Shabbos, so I, you know, intelligently, I opened my umbrella before Shabbos. Can I use my umbrella now on Shabbos? So he says, it's still going to be problematic. He says, there's room to argue whether it be perhaps permitted. However, nonetheless, at the end of the day, even if you left it open yourself on Shabbos, it is going to be prohibited to use it on Shabbos because of a potential issue of Marat Ayin. Because other people, Kimi Yodea im Archkom etmol, who is going to know? Other people are going to look at you. They're not going to know that you did this trick and you opened it before Shabbos. They're going to think you opened it on Shabbos. Especially nowadays in our generation, the Rebbe is writing, where there are more business people than Torah scholars. People do not know the halacha so well. They're not going to know the truth. And so it's better that you do not do this because of the issue of Marat Ayin. There is a third issue in addition to Ohel and Marat Ayin, and that's the position of the Chatam Sofer in source 16, where the Chatam Sofer writes that he disagrees with the Ohel principle. We already saw that earlier. He agrees with the Chatam Sofer, but he thinks there are other potential problems involved. Umash yesh nidun, and what is the problem here? Mishum tikun mana. He thinks the first issue is the problem of tikun mana, that when you make an umbrella, and effectively you are doing with your completing an object, a utensil, right? The utensil of an umbrella wasn't usable at the moment. And tikun mana is the melacha of make v'patish, of completing an object. And so in effect, what you're doing is you're transgressing this, one of the other certain melachot of make v'patish, of completing an object, right? Putting the finishing touches. And kevan de'pdichato ra'u l'shamesh bo b'chol makom, chashiv tikun mana, since now that you've opened it, it is now usable, you have now transgressed the prohibition of tikun mana. He also, yeah. Okay, so let's just the second question first. In theory, it'd probably be for Noda Yehuda, it would still be an ohel, would just be probably wouldn't have the mechitzah potentially, so it'd probably be still rabbinically prohibited. But you'd have to like really be flat even for that. So at some point, you know, it's not going to be a really useful umbrella. Yeah, depending on how flat it is, I don't know if it's going to be still so useful. So, but here's what to think about. That could be one, you know, possible solution to get around the Noda Yehuda's problems. Although you still might have the Marat Ayin issues involved as well. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to think about Martin Ein, isn't how far we extend it. We'll talk about that maybe at the very end. I want to get back to that. But there is what to talk about because Martin Ein, it's a little tricky how to apply Martin Ein in that case, and I could see it go both ways. In terms of your first question, which referred to Tikkun Monday, why isn't a foldable chair also defined as a problem of fixing utensil? It actually is a great question for the Chazon Ish. There's actually a lot to talk about for the Chazon Ish Shita. He uses Tikkun Monday's idea of finishing a utensil often in his own psak. He uses it as a definition for why electricity is prohibited, because closing a circuit is Tikkun Monday. He talks about this a lot. It's like a big question people deal with, and it's not entirely clear what the answer is. I mean, there's what to talk about, but it's very involved. But it is an interesting question, and it's a good point to make. The Chazon Ish, as well, makes a second critique, or this would be I guess the fourth potential problem of an umbrella, which is he argued that it is also it's an underlying part. He says what is also an issue of an umbrella is that it is uvdin dechol. It is weekday activity. Now, we discussed this last week, so I'm not going to go through the whole involved discussion we had last week, but uvdin dechol, it's not really clear why is an umbrella uvdin dechol. Right, what makes an umbrella like workday activity? There's no malacha involved in an umbrella. I mean, according to Chazon Ish, there's no malacha involved in an umbrella. So why would it be uvdin dechol? He says, davar masur l'chachamim lidor geder b'makom pirtza. It's the responsibility of the chachamim of every generation to literally erect fences, around things which are problematic. But it's really hard to understand why it is uvdin dechol based on what we discussed last week in terms of defining uvdin dechol. It's not really clear. And yet, that's what the Chazon Ish argues. I'm just going to put it out there. That's what he says. And so, in summary, then, what we have is, in effect, four primary reasons for the potential prohibition of using an umbrella on Shabbos. We have the prohibition of ohel, all the discussion of is it a tent, is it not a tent, and there was a lot of discussion about that. We have the possibility of a Mark Ein issue about what other onlookers will see and think you did if you're using an umbrella on Shabbos. We have the potential Chazon Ish problem of Tikkun Monday, of Makib Patish, completing utensil, making it now usable. And you have the possible issue of Uvdin Dechol, it being non-Shabbos activity, and therefore it is prohibited. And that's why, for the most part, if you look at Poskim, look at the generations of various Psaks, you'll find that umbrellas are consistently prohibited. According to 4:15, we're not going to be inside. The Be'er Halacha, the Mishnah Berurah quotes that it's prohibited. Shmirat HaShabbos Kilachata, Shlomo Zalman Orbach quotes that it is prohibited to use in any case, even within the Eruv, doesn't make a difference. It's always going to be prohibited to use an umbrella in these contexts. I saw on the chat someone asked about an umbrella hat. Because an umbrella hat, you may have seen these little umbrellas. There's no opening or closing of it. It's always open. Interesting. I think in terms of OL, it's an interesting question. If it is always open, you might still have a problem of them. You might still have the Martin Ein issue potentially. Yeah, I mean, let me think about that. That's an interesting question about the umbrella hat. I'd have to think about it, and I'd have to see more closely how it works, and if really there's no opening involved. But it's an interesting question. However, maybe it's so partially not really respond, but I do want to talk about this. I want to end the share with this. Is that in recent times, actually just the last few years, there has been in Israel this new invention, kind of like a Soman invention, though it's not from Soman, and Soman actually does not like this invention. But there has been this newfound invention that they call the Magen Shabbat, a Shabbos kosher umbrella. What is the Shabbos kosher umbrella? So let me show you a picture for how this umbrella looks. So if you look down at the bottom, I show you here. Here's the umbrella, happens to be white. And you can see that on top of the umbrella, there is this box. Right? I kind of have my cursor on top of it right now. There's this little box. And the box is always there. And so what this box does is it ensures that even when the umbrella is closed, there already is this space underneath. There always is this space. If you look at this diagram here, it's very clear. When it's open, you have this space underneath covered. And even when it's closed, you have this Magen Shabbat, this special thing attached to the top of the umbrella, which ensures that there's always an OL, some type of tent covering. And so the argument goes that since there's always a tent present, therefore, even when you open the umbrella, you're not actually creating a new tent, you're only extending an old tent. And there's no prohibition of extending an old tent. Indeed, the Shulchan Aruch quotes source 18. He's obviously quoting the Gemara, and the Gemara is talking about it within Gemara's language, particular case of how they would do this in the Gemara's time. But the basic rule is that if a tent is already open, you are allowed to extend the tent's covering further. Right. So once you already have the basic minimum of tent, even if it's only a tefach, one hand breadth tall, a hand breadth wide, you are allowed to then extend the tent and cover more area. And so the argument goes that the same thing should be true for this Magen Shabbat, that you already have this basic tent, this basic OL. All you are doing by opening it on Shabbos is you are extending that tent. And therefore, when it comes to the prohibition of OL, the possible concerns of opening a tent, none of those will be present when you open this special Magen Shabbat. That's kind of this gimmick, this gimmick that they want to create to be able to use a tent, use an umbrella on Shabbos. What about the problems of Uvdin Nechol? So one of their solutions to Uvdin Nechol is they have it, actually don't have a picture here of it, but on this Magen Shabbat, it says, Lichvot Shabbat. It says that this utensil is specifically designed for use on Shabbos. And indeed, there is precedent for this, that if a utensil is designed, it says specifically on it, it is designed and specially used for Shabbos, then it is permitted. To give an example, I don't have a source here inside, but the Magen Avraham talks about combs, that potentially a comb to comb your hair would be potentially problematic on Shabbos, Uvdin Nechol, that, you know, there's some type of non-Shabbatic part of combing your hair. But if you have a special comb, which is designated only for use on Shabbos, so then it would obviate the problem of Uvdin Nechol, you'd be allowed to use it. And so, too, this Magen Shabbat has the word Shabbat on it. It is specifically designed for use on Shabbos only, and therefore it wouldn't be a problem of Uvdin Nechol. Likewise, the argument is it's not a problem of Marit Ayin, because everyone knows this is especially for Shabbos. This isn't identical to anything else, and therefore there really should be no problems of using this umbrella. This umbrella, this Magen Shabbat, is actually very controversial. As you can imagine, like any newfound invention is, especially when there's been such a strong, multi-generational precedent not to use umbrella on Shabbos. So, you know, any new thing, technology, technological innovation always has a lot of people disagreeing about it, think it's really bad. So it really became this really big controversy in Israel. I don't think in practice, because it was invented in Israel, and I don't think it rains as often in Israel, especially depending on where you live, it really never rains. I don't think it became as big a deal as if it had come up in America. I think it would be a lot more popular, or it would have been a lot more discussion about it. But nonetheless, in Israel, I quoted to you two sources. There are plenty of Haskamot. One of them is Rav Ema Cohen, Arash Shiva in Israel. He just had the best kind of synopsis of why he thinks it's permitted. But there's a number of people. I think even I saw that Rabbi Riskin of Lincoln Square was matir the this Magen Shabbat. You can see a whole list online of people who are matir it. And indeed, they argue that indeed this new mitriya Berem, I'm reading it part of the middle of source number 18, Berem idea mitriya chadashash yesh ba tefach patuach ein safek shezeh mutarm ikar din. It's clearly permitted. There's no problem with OL, and there should be no prohibition. And you do im devar maran of kuk im nesor tem mutar sofnu latir ta asur. And he as well adds that we should therefore permit this because it's well known that the common refrain of Rav Kook apparently that if we prohibit things which should be permitted, then in the end we're going to end up permitting things which should be prohibited. Right? If we're too strict, you make too strict boundaries, we're going to end up crossing those boundaries over things which really are prohibited. Right? If we take too hard stances on things which really should be permitted, that's the basic argument that he makes. Others make similar arguments. However, as I quoted the Machon Somet, who does have a lot of other technological innovations, they disagree with this. They think this should be problematic. They give two reasons for why it's prohibited. They think, first, that there's a problem with Marit Ayin. People won't know the difference, even though there's a small little box on top. Nonetheless, people won't really recognize the difference. Mike, it's really a little bit to your point about the flat umbrella, that they're arguing at the end of the day, people don't really know the difference. They're not really paying attention. At the end of the day, when the umbrella is open, you can't really see that it's any different. They as well make a more technical argument that if the umbrella is ever upside down, so an ohel, which is upside down, kind of with the tent on the bottom, is not an ohel. And OL is only an OL if the covering is on the top. And so you'd have to ensure that the umbrella is always, you know, facing upwards for it to be defined as a tent when it's closed. And even if you are careful about it, not everyone will be careful about that. And so they think you should be prohibited for that reason. At the end of the day, I bring this all up because I think it's an interesting example, interesting setting in which you kind of see all of these principles we raised, you know, come to the fore. This question of OHEL, potential problem of it being a tent, the problem potentially of OVD in the hall, of it being a workday activity, the problem of Maran Ayin, the problem of other people not knowing, other people like misconceiving what you're doing, and the problem potentially of Tikkun Mane, of completing a utensil. All of these kind of come up in this newfound invention. And in Israel, to my knowledge, even though there are a lot of people who did permit it, it's still not so popular. I mean, it's new, so I guess we'll see what happens in the next 20 years, and I guess we'll look backwards and see what happened. But it certainly did not really take off, to my knowledge, due to the controversies. And part of this obviously relates not just to the, you know, the strictly legal arguments, but also just to the sense of preserving tradition, preserving the precedent, which has been established for generations, of not using umbrellas on Shabbos. Any questions or comments so far? I do want to make one last point, but I'm happy to keep any questions or comments. Joe asked, can you walk under an umbrella if someone else is holding it opened? So that is a really interesting question, because it does obviate the problem potentially of you opening it. But in terms of the Maran Ayin issue, in theory, that would be just as applicable. That kind of is pretty identical to the Noda Behuda's case. But it is worth noting that just historically, in terms of locations, it's clear that the Noda Behuda prohibited it entirely, thought that his community got rid of that custom. But apparently, the custom was in Pressburg, in the Chasam Sofer's town, that people indeed did have non-Jews open an umbrella, and it seems that even the Jews themselves would hold the umbrella, right? So it seems like that the customs could have changed, such that nowadays, I don't think anyone ever uses an umbrella, opens an umbrella, closes an umbrella, has someone else hold it for you. But it is an interesting thing to think about, the fact that, you know, clearly, even from the time of the Chatam Sofer, you know, the common stock is kind of solidified to be to prohibit, you know, over the generations, something that didn't necessarily have to happen. And yet, I guess that's the way the history, you know, prevailed in terms of how the consensus of Psak. I will say, I guess, in that context, this is my last comment before I get to take questions, which is kind of a summary of the last three shiurim. Like the last three topics we've covered, subways, umbrellas, and bicycles, all have dealt with the same issue of transportation on Shabbos. And the questions have been, is it possible to use these, you know, newfound technologies in order to make it easier for a person to get to shul, for a person to do the things he needs to do on Shabbos, he or she needs to do on Shabbos, right, to have easier access? Right, an umbrella is a good example of this, where, you know, having an umbrella could really make a huge difference in terms of your willingness to do, you know, anything you need to do on Shabbos. Whether it's, you know, going to be invited out for Shabbos meals, whether it's going to shul, whether it's, you know, a woman having to go to mikvah on Friday night. All of these things are important, you know, really important halachot, you know, going to shul, mikvah on Friday night. These things could be like real mitzvot d'oraita, like a Torah commandment, that we have real values in doing them, that an umbrella or a subway or a bicycle, all of which could help and really, you know, ameliorate our lives. And yet, at the same time, the common psak has been that it is forbidden. And so at the end of the day, kind of my summary to this will be kind of two points. On the one hand, I think that if you kind of like followed our analysis in each of the objects, the subways, bicycles, umbrellas, they're all distinct, but there may be room to discuss that perhaps under certain conditions, we would relax some of these prohibitions. You know, that maybe someone, I don't know actually what's the common custom, I was trying to find out, and I haven't actually seen much in writing. I'm sure people have dealt with it. There's been a lot of discussion about what if you're like in a wheelchair, right? If you want to go to shul on Shabbos, or, you know, you're saying, you know, whatever it is you want, or a woman in a wheelchair has to go to the mikvah on Friday night. Right? Is there like any room for, like, if it's raining, to use, you know, an umbrella or have a non-Jew carry an umbrella for you? You know, there are a lot of certain situations for people who umbrella would really make a very significant difference in their ability to even go to shul or do any normal activities on Shabbos. And maybe in those situations there is room to permit. You'd have to ask a competent posek. Each situation would be individual, but I think it certainly worth thinking about that those cases may be distinct and different, and there may be more room to be lenient because these issues are a little bit more fluid. On the other hand, I'll make the final comment I want to make, which is that I think what's interesting about this, and I was looking to see if anybody writes about this, and I haven't seen anyone comment, but in some ways, all of these issues very much evoke to me the issue of driving cars on Chavez, a controversy which came up, I think, in the 60s or 70s or 50s even, one of the defining issues between, you know, Orthodox Judaism and conservative and reform Judaism. And part of the contention, beyond being the halachic concerns, was that there's also a sociological argument to be made, and certainly this has borne out, that if you allow people to, you know, use cars on Shabbos, that in effect, there's no longer going to be a stable community living in one place. Instead, you know, Jews, you don't have to live in Manhattan to go to Lincoln Square. You can live in, you know, far out somewhere in, you know, New Jersey, and you can still travel in to, for shul on Shabbos. And indeed, we see that, you know, if you look historically, the conservative movement and reform movement have certainly suffered as a result of their leniency. I'm not necessarily commenting on the right, on whether it's right or wrong to be lenient, but that leniency certainly had a strong sociological effect and to the detriment of their movement. And I think it's worth thinking about. I haven't seen any literature to suggest this, but perhaps part of what motivated you know, the sages, the rabbis over time to prohibit subways and trains and bicycles and umbrellas may come from a similar place, that at the end of the day, though we want to allow people to have a relaxing Shabbos, to allow an ease of access to places, we also want to preserve the sense of community, the sense of everyone living closer to each other. And indeed, you know, even something like an umbrella, if it rains in your town, you're going to live closer to shul just because if it occasionally might rain, you're going to live closer to shul if you can't take the subway. All of these things are going to impact where you're going to live and preserve the social cohesion of a community. And so on a meta level, I think you could make that argument that that's perhaps partially what's motivating the appeal to prohibit these things or not, you know, encourage their use. But again, as I said, it's a little bit my supposition. I haven't seen anything in writing, but I do feel that that may be partly what's motivating the general sense for all three of these issues. That's kind of all I have to say. I'm happy to take any questions. Anyone has any questions? Yeah. Yeah, I think the slippery slope argument is true. You could argue that too here as well, and that would relate to the business concerns. You know, at some point, if you're allowed to use a subway for a shul, maybe you're also going to go to business and work, and you know, all of those arguments. I think you could make that argument. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think for bikes, that's more of an argument. It's my impression is that in terms of fixing umbrellas, most people that I know, if an umbrella breaks, you're probably just tossing it. I mean, it's not worth enough money to fix it. That's my impression. In terms of the muksa concern, yeah, I mean, they do break occasionally, but I don't think it's enough of a concern on that end. But not, I mean, bicycles, I think it is a real concern. I don't think for umbrellas, I'd raise it the same way. Yeah, Joe, you have a question? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that the concerns for umbrellas, I mean, the thing is true for subways as well, like in terms of transportation. Right. I think this is one of the major questions to be asked is, you know, people who have trouble walking, have trouble going around, right? Not using an umbrella is certainly going to be much more detrimental, to their ability to do anything on Shabbos. So there's certainly what to talk about, you know. As I said, I think there's what to talk about, and, you know, it's certainly one of the things to consider in terms of when you analyze the topic as a whole. All right, any other questions or comments? Okay, so we're going to end for tonight. Thank you all for joining. Tomorrow, next week's topic should be an exciting topic. We're going to start talking about elevators on Shabbos, which is very much a cosmopolitan New York City topic. So I look forward to seeing you all then. Have a great week, and I'll see you all next week.